Just before you start listening to this podcast, a reminder that we have a special subscription offer. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for £12, as well as a £20 Amazon voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher if you'd like to get this offer.
Welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's politics podcast. It looks as if there's going to be a general election after all. MPs are set to vote on it at roughly 7 o'clock this evening, and the Labour Party has said it's finally agreed to come round to the idea. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles to discuss. Now, James, Tory Party calls snap election with a significant lead in the opinion polls. What could possibly go wrong?
Yes, 2017 is going to be the ghost at the feast of this election. But I think there are differences from 2017. And I think 2017 could actually help the Tories. One of the big problems for the Tories in 2017 was this sense that people looked at the polls, saw them ahead, and they were ahead then by more than they are now. And thought, oh, a Tory victory is inevitable. And so no one really scrutinised Labour's policy prospectus. And everyone became very concerned about what a kind of Tory government with a mega majority would do. I think that's why Theresa May's remarks about a free vote on fox hunting kind of caught fire, because it seemed to give a sense of what the Tory party off the leash would do. I think there are three big differences from 2017. The first is the result is uncertain. I think people will feel that if they want a Tory government, they have to vote for it, which I think they did feel in 2017. I think the second difference is people have seen 2.5 years of gridlock in Parliament. It's hard to think that the last 2.5 years are a particularly good advert for hung parliaments in the British system. And then I think the third difference is Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson's, the views of them among the public are much more baked in than the views of Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May were in 2017. Theresa May in 2017 was Prime Minister, but she was a relatively unknown figure. So when the voters discovered her flaws, that they were rather shocked. They'd rather liked her, and then they came round to having a much more negative view of her. I think Boris Johnson, you know, both his positives and his negatives are much more established. Jeremy Corbyn, I think the question is, you know, can the souffle rise twice? I mean, in 2017 he took off. I am sceptical, given his current polling numbers, you know, that he can again. And if you look at how, you know, for example, you know, those very people who sang, oh, Jeremy Corbyn, you know, young voters, their views of him have turned very negative in the last 2.5 years, because, you know, I think they are generally quite a pro-Remain group and they feel that Corbyn hasn't delivered for them. I think those are the differences. But I think this is the big thing to note, is the Tories are basically betting the house on a Labour collapse. Because even the most optimistic Tory thinks that they are bound to lose some seats to the SNP in Scotland and some seats to the Lib Dems in England. If you consider the fact that they're obviously not going to be able to do a deal with the DUP again because of the nature of the Brexit deal, you are then looking at the Tories having to make 40-odd gains from Labour to have a majority. And that is a big ask in any election. And that does require a kind of full-on Labour collapse.
Katie, talk us through what will happen when the voting takes place this evening.
So I think it's important to point out we don't definitely have an election yet. This could still fail to happen this afternoon. The odds are now in favour of Ron because of Labour's decision. But ultimately, there is a chance that parties put down amendments. Now, some of these amendments have been discussed are votes for 16-year-olds. The SNP have suggested that they at least want that to be debated. Labour MPs have suggested that where Jo Swinson from the Liberal Democrats and the SNP suggested at the weekend that they wouldn't try and amend a bill overly so because they'd want to get an election done, they've made no such promises. So I think that you could look for votes for EU nationals, you could look for votes for 16-year-olds, and you could look for a movement in date from the 12th of December to an earlier date. As it is a one-line bill, it can be amended. The Tories have been worried about this for some time, hence why they've kept trying to get elections through the Fixed Term Parliament Act, even though it has a higher threshold of 2/3 of MPs. And here's the thing, if someone does put down on those amendments, I think it gets harder for other opposition parties to not join it by voting for it, because ultimately, say Labour said they wanted votes for 16-year-olds, the Liberal Democrats would find it hard to not join that side because it would look strange, even if they'd suggested that they just wanted to get the election through. And the Tories have suggested that if any amendment was added, they would not proceed with the bill because they think it would be almost be a wrecking amendment. So that's how this could fall before you get there. And speaking to, I suppose, Conservative MPs earlier today, I do think that there is a sense that an election is coming, but also there's a sense that for all the Tory confidence and the fact they've tried to get an election now three times, this will be their fourth attempt, I don't pick up overconfidence amongst Tory MPs, but some have come around to the idea of having an election before a Brexit deal is passed, something that has been a subject of debate, on the grounds that they just think this is the best shot the Tories have. One MP said to me this morning, here's the thing, even if it doesn't go exactly to plan and all the things don't work in our favour, we won't be demolished in this election. We'll still probably be the second largest party. And they felt that there was a risk if this drags on and you put forward the Brexit deal and you put it through Parliament and it was amended, you could eventually get to such a late election that the party could have such a turn in the fortunes that it wouldn't be about winning, it'd be about how far back you came. So I think that's the thinking. And ultimately, if this doesn't work this afternoon, I think the Tories will be very downcast.
And James, we've heard from an ebullient Jeremy Corbyn who's saying he can't wait to get stuck into the campaigning. What's changed his mind? Because only yesterday he was deciding he didn't want an early general election. Now he says he can't wait.
The public reason Jeremy Corbyn gives is that no deal is now off the table because of this extension. But frankly, no deal was off the table because of this extension when Labour abstained on the Fixed Term Parliament Act motion yesterday. I think Jeremy Corbyn himself has always been more eager for an election. I think what has changed the calculation for Labour is the Tories got 299 votes for an election last night. If you add in the 35 SNP MPs, or I think we should say 34, because it sounds like Angus McNeill won't be voting for an election, you have a majority. And that suggested that the Tories could have got their one-line bill through. And it would have been a very bad look for Labour to have gone into an election having fought to stop voters from having a say on the current Parliament at this moment in time. And I think that's what's driven the change. I don't think Labour MPs are hugely enthusiastic about it. One Labour MP has posted a picture on Twitter of a charge of a light brigade, which suggests that they are not feeling it. So I think this is one of the interesting questions. Is this a Labour MP in a Bristol seat with the Lib Dems as rivals? You know, this is one of these questions, which is, you know, how much, you know, the Tory calculation essentially is that they can rally the Leave vote to them, marginalise the Brexit party, while the Remain vote splits between Labour and the Liberal Democrats. That strategic calculation has to be proved correct for the Tories to win a majority, because I think, as Katie was saying, you know, even the most... Another difference from 2017. 2017, people were talking about really big Tory majorities. Right now, I think if you offered Boris Johnson a majority of 5 at the end of this, he would bite your hand off for that. And so this is a very... Even now, even with a deal, the path that the Tories are pursuing to electoral victory is narrow. They can't really afford for things to go wrong, and they can't afford for the Brexit Party to take fire, catch fire. They can't afford for Joe Swinson, for example, as I was talking to one Tory campaigner this morning, you know, they can't afford for Joe Swinson, for example, to have a kind of repeat of Cleggmania, because at the moment the Lib Dems are hurting Labour more than the Tories. But if the Lib Dems got a big surge in the polls during the campaign, that can endanger a bunch of Tory shire seats. So this is a calculation, but one of the things that I think we can sometimes forget when analysing this is that Boris Johnson does not have a series of great options. He doesn't, you know, I was talking to one cabinet minister who was deeply sceptical of the election Saturday last night, and he just said to me, yeah, but I don't have any better ideas. And I think this is the point, which is he is trying to push for Brexit through a hung parliament that I think that his defeat on the programme motion suggests is not inclined to pass his deal clean. So what does he do?
Right. Now, Katie, there had been talk of Labour somehow changing leader in time for this general election. I imagine that is now procedurally impossible.
Yes, I mean, I think Jeremy Corbyn is safe. And I do think that actually, even of all the speculation about a new leader, I think the sense, majority sense, apart from those who fall prey to wishful thinking, has been that it's about who succeeds Jeremy Corbyn rather than who comes before. So yes, people at Labour conference were talking about who should the next Labour leader be, but I still think there is this view that it would be Jeremy Corbyn leading the general election. Mm-hmm. Where this might have changed is if there was a second referendum before a general election. I think you would need a big set piece event to make people, you know, focus their minds. And ultimately, is this risky for Jeremy Corbyn? I think what I would be, I think it's worth pointing out, is you did have a GQ interview a little while back where John McDonnell went slightly rogue, which is becoming customary, and suggested that if Labour didn't win the next election, both he and Jeremy Corbyn would step down. Now, I think he'd probably be happy to be shadow chancellor for the next leader, but he suggested Jeremy Corbyn would stand down. Now, Jeremy Corbyn has not repeated that. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Corbyn has been pressed in various television interviews on whether he will resign if his party doesn't win, and he has refused to bite. I also think that what you've got to price in here is you keep hearing, well, Labour can't win a majority. Well, A, 2017, they didn't win a majority, but they did do a lot better than people expected. And two, they don't actually need a majority. The Tories need a majority. Mm. What Labour need is enough seats to start to talk to other potential partners in Parliament. And the most obvious one, the one where both sides have hinted there could be some, you know, some ripe or fertile ground there, is the SNP. So Labour would ultimately only need to get, I think, late 200. Someone can do better math than me here. And then...
Less than that.
And then you add on the SNP, which is expected to make a pretty clean sweep of Scotland.
If Labour got to 270 seats and you add the SNP in, yeah.
Yeah, right. Call that late 200s. And then you can start to see how they have a power-sharing pact. So I do think it's a less steep climb for Labour, even if they are behind in the polls.
So James, if Labour falls short, Jeremy Corbyn just walks 500 miles up to Edinburgh. And then...
The point is that the Tories have to win an outright majority to govern. Labour don't. Yeah, so let's imagine that let's make the math simple here. So I'm rubbish at maths, right? You need 320 seats, basically. You technically need 326 seats for a majority. In reality, you need 320, right? If the SNP were to get 50 seats in Scotland, Labour would need 270 seats, and that's a straightforward deal. If they get less than 270, it gets more complicated because Jo Swinson has repeatedly said that she wouldn't want to put Jeremy Corbyn into Downing Street. She could never do that, etc., etc., etc. So that's when things become more complicated. But one of the reasons why this election is a risk for the Tories is they have to get a majority. They do not have any possible coalition partners out there.
And finally, Katie, what about Dominic Grieve, Philip Hammond, people who don't have a Tory quip right now are hoping to get it in time for a general election? Does this now look as if they won't be standing again, certainly not as Conservatives?
Look, nothing is impossible, especially in current politics, but I think Philip Hammond standing as a Conservative MP in this election seems pretty far out. I noticed on the Today programme, he was suggesting at one point that actually the reason the Tories want this election now is not necessarily because of Brexit, but so they can stop Philip Hammond from returning to the Conservative Party. It's a take. I think that ultimately, if you look at what's going to happen to the 21 Tory rebels, I think there is still a hope amongst some of them that they will be allowed to return to the party ahead of this election. And I think the deciding factor there, that if the number 10 do decide to do that, is how have they voted the past couple of weeks. If you voted with the government in every Brexit vote as they have wanted you to, I think there is a chance. If you are like Philip Hammond or Dominic Grieve and others who have ultimately taken different views on the Letwin Amendment, I think it's very hard to see how you get back in.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a political cabinet last week. Nicky Morgan kind of pressed Boris Johnson on this one. For the first time, he appeared to give some ground on this idea.
But they're only talking about six or seven of the 21.
It would be more of a 21, but it would be something like that in terms of actually standing in their seats,
yes,
again.
Exactly. Because some people would be given blessing before they retire.
Some people would be readmitted to the party.
Like
to
Nicholas Soames.
Yeah, exactly. So I think one of the interesting questions is, for this, which is, on the one hand, Boris Johnson wants to kind of make this point about party discipline, and also, you know, it doesn't hurt with his appeal to Brexit Party voters to say, look, I've kicked all these people out of the Tory Party for backing the Benn Bill, the Benn Act. But in an election where every seat counts, the case for readmitting some of these people becomes stronger. For example, you know, it is hard to imagine that any Tory other than Steve Brine could hold Winchester. No Tory other than Stephen Hammond would have a chance in Wimbledon. And if you are getting into a situation where you think it really is coming down to, you know, skin of your teeth stuff, you can see the case for bringing them back in because they are the people who give you the best chance of holding those individual seats.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. Now, we're going to have a live recording of Coffee House Shots to discuss the election campaign midway through, or it depends if the MPs vote for it today, it'll be midway through. Otherwise, who knows what we'll be discussing. But it's going to be on Tuesday, the 12th of November at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. To get tickets, go to spectator.co.uk/live shots. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our producer, Cindy Yu.